It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 7:45. Not even doing an hour tonight. We'll just do 45 minutes. And we're going to be back again after Northwestern beats Michigan State tonight. It's a statement game. They got to win tonight. Pete and I have been talking about this all week long, that the Northwestern Wildcats got to beat a good team. And this is the team. This could be the game. So they play the Michigan State Spartans coming up here on WGN Radio. After the game, we'll be back. Tonight, we're going to talk with the new minor league hitting coach for the Chicago White Sox, Willie Harris. Willie Harris, of course, was a utility player for the 2005 championship team. He was actually, this is a great trivia question for everybody, or an answer, is that Willie Harris was the man who scored the winning run in Game 4 of the World Series. There
did
he goes.
Know that.
You did not know that?
I did not know that. See what I learned from
your
show?
There you go. So we'll talk with him. And also Rick Kogan's going to be on, and we're going to talk with Rick about two things. Turkle Archive, the Studs Turkle Archive at WFMT, is looking to digitize. He had a big story about that. But it's interesting because it's all these great, I guess some over 5,500 shows that Studs Turkle has done, and they're taking them from reel to reel and putting them online. And one of the interviews is with a young reporter from the Chicago Tribune from 1978, Rick Kogan, when he was 25 years old.
Yeah, I've heard some of Rick's stuff from when he's very young. He sounds like a little girl.
It doesn't even.
He does. Okay, no, that might be quite a stretch, but believe it. He's like, yeah, it's Rick Kogan.
No, going, for anyone is that? For anyone listening right now who's a WGN lifer, I guess someone who listens every night or every day, Andrea Darlis is in studio with us, and we are so excited on the download.
Oh, hey! You're so sweet.
How great is this?
This is great. First time I'm on your show.
I know.
I love
it. I'm so happy you're here. Andrea and the Steve Cochran show are going to Iowa for Iowa caucuses, along with Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantis in the team. Mm-hmm. When do you guys leave?
Steve and Kevin and I are leaving on Sunday, I think late morning, and Anna and Ro and her producer are leaving, I think, the same time. So we're doing the Cochran caravan and then the Khan caravan.
So for you, it's interesting because you've been doing the Caucus Ruckus, which is the every morning on the Cochran show this week. But talk about like what you need to – what are you learning about the Iowa caucus? Because Pete and I talked about it earlier this week. I'm like, I'm still confused about how this goes down.
It's a great question, and I really had to do a lot of learning about the caucuses because, I mean, I've been here for 18 years, so every 4 years we – quote-unquote cover the caucuses,
right.
But it's strictly, you know, from an anchoring perspective, the numbers come in, we read it, we read the numbers,
right.
Announce the
somebody
winners,
wins,
and then go
second
home.
Place, right?
Exactly.
Right.
So I've never been to the Iowa caucuses, so to be in the fray, I think, is going to be very cool, and I've learned a lot. I've read up on the caucuses. We were talking in our newsroom, and as I've been doing, these people are saying, well, what does caucus even mean? Where did it even come from? And it was, I did my research. You know, I guess in the old days I would have gone to the library and started reading up on it. But everything, of course, is online. It's fascinating. Really, the caucuses to me are kind of the last archival type. You know, it's a great indicator of the political process, but kind of the last piece of history.
It's historic,
that we really have left. It's not archaic, but it's a way of voting that people today might say, "What?
It's very persuasive in what I know about it. I mean, it is this sort of like you get in a big tent or a big room or a big hall, and there's different corners that you go to, and it's really on the people go stand in the area of the candidate that they like. I mean, that's as archaic as it gets.
That's exactly what it is on the Democratic side. Now, the Republicans are a little more straightforward. They have ballots, just like mm-hmm. we would go to the polls here in Chicago and vote.
Why are they going to make everything so complicated?
Exactly. So that right. So the Democrats now, they have that's kind of how we got the term caucus ruckus,
mm-hmm.
and because that's exactly what it is. You know, they have these sites all throughout Iowa, and you go. There's 99 counties,
mm-hmm.
And some of the candidates try to visit every single county. The first person to do that was Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley. So they call it the full Grassley
Visit
all 99
That's
counties.
Right. You were talking about that yesterday or the day before?
Yeah, that was yesterday's caucus rock.
You know, it's interesting because covering it, I'm not even sure how you do that. I mean, you're in the room and you just kind of follow where the crowds are going. I mean, how do you see yourself night of covering the Iowa caucus?
I think I personally, frankly, I would love to be in a gymnasium or in the basement of a church watching this go on, because from what I hear, people dress up. You know, they're holding signs for their candidate, and they're trying to woo voters from one side to the other.
Now, maybe it sounds like the circus. Sounds like the carnival. Does. Like, I was like, hey, come on in here. You got to see the bearded lady. Come on, come on, come on, come on.
Come see my store.
Yeah,
come,
right,
you know, you're
right,
at like a right. Moroccan marketplace. Come see my store.
There you go.
But yeah, so the Hillary supporters. In fact, David Muir did a nice piece on this on ABC News the other night, and they were interviewing some of the people, and they have their pins on, and everybody here saying bring back some swag, because they have pins and hats and headbands and buttons and wristbands and things like that, and they're all dressed up, and it's one side of the gym trying to get supporters over to their side, because you need 15% of the vote to be viable, to stay in the race. So if you think you're losing people, then it becomes it's kind of like, you know what? It kind of reminds me of some of the Board of Trade, too.
Yeah,
you know, they're
right,
on the pit floor,
right.
Not now with the iPads.
A lot of hands and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, come on over, you know, trying to entice voters to come to their side. And they can switch, you know, up to the last day, up to the last second and say, you know what? I'm going over to Hillary.
I'd be going over to Bernie. I'd be such a subversive. I would play around. Like, I would wait, like, with 10, 9, I'd jump to the other side. And they're like, oh, we got another one. And then I'd jump to the other one. Then they'd realize I'm playing. And
psych.
All right, Andrea Darlis is in studio with us tonight. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the Iowa caucuses.
Hello, Iowa. It's the Iowa caucus raucous with Andrea Darlis.
I love it, and this is where Cochran comes in and goes, punk music. Punk music was founded in Iowa.
You like that? Actually, now you know this. Okay, there's a band, Slipknot.
Yes.
And they're very heavy thrash.
Heavy kind of, yeah, right.
They have a song called Iowa as well. I don't know if it's just the song and the album or just the song, but they have a song called Iowa. I couldn't use it because I tried
too
to bleep
swears,
out. Yeah, it'd be like, rah, bleep, 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 bleep.
You could do that. You could do that on the download. Late night, you could do that.
That's right. Maybe
I don't
after
know if you could
game.
Do that. Yeah, 7 o'clock in the morning on the Cochran Show. Andrea Darlis with us tonight. We're talking about the Iowa caucuses. She does the segment on the Cochran Show, Caucus Ruckus. You know, it's an interesting start. I mean, this is really the start.
It is.
And for you, I mean, once the caucuses are wrapped up, which is still a big issue, because not only do you have to deal with the politics, but you got to deal with the weather.
Right. I know a snowstorm is supposed to be coming in Tuesday is what Skillen said.
Yeah,
so hopefully
so,
he
yeah.
can
But then
hold
but
that
here
off.
Comes the beginning of the primary season, and you know, you just gave us word that you're going to be heading to New Hampshire as well. So
yes.
Talk about, I mean, this has got to be exciting for you to be, you know, on the road following candidates and following
story. Yeah. No, it's very exciting. I mean, I have to give Steve Cochran all the credit, because he said, you know, we need to have a presence. WGN has to have a presence at many of these primaries and, of course, the Iowa caucuses. And I had never been. And so I really hopped on board. I said, yeah, we have to cover this. We have to be there. And I think we're the only station in Chicago sending two shows,
awesome. Yeah.
Morning and afternoon drive, to be there. So, yeah, I think it's good to be there. I think this is going to be a really cool year, too, because you can never predict. I understand that. And there's always, you know, exit polling and things of that sort. But when Rick Santorum won Iowa, who knew that he was going to crash and burn and fizzle so quickly?
Did Howard Dean win Iowa? Isn't
Howard
that a famous
Dean
story?
Did. Yeah. Yeah, Barack Obama, of course, did.
Right,
but
right.
But what I like about this particular election, Justin, is that it is unpredictable. You know, you don't know. It is down to the wire right now with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. They are down to the wire. And it appears as though Trump is going to be the Republican candidate, but who knows?
Well,
we talked on Monday,
I think it was, about, you know, that's really a race for second place.
It really is.
And that's important, because the sort of standard RNC support is going to go to that second place candidate, because Donald Trump and the RNC don't see eye to eye.
No,
so
absolutely.
So it is interesting, like, just kind of seeing who's going to sort of place.
Right.
That's part of the fun of the Iowa caucus. And what I like about it is there's really no follow the leader, in the sense that there wasn't a primary last week and there wasn't one the day before. So voters are really, for the first time, you know, making their choice known just based solely on what they feel, as opposed to what New Hampshire did or what South Carolina did or whatever
states are. And Iowa, I don't even know if you can use this word, but Iowa, I think the caucuses are fun. Not only, you know, we talked about the history behind the caucuses, but it's fun. You really see the candidates trying to be themselves and eating the loose meat sandwiches and the corn on the cob, you know, and they all hit the Iowa State Fair trying to show, you know, hey, I'm eating pork chop on a stick and a fried Twinkie. So I think you kind of see who they really are, whereas the other primaries. New Hampshire's going to be great, too. That'll be a pivotal state.
So good.
I think I'm going to be there by myself, but working for us and for ABC.
So let me ask you this. You know, you guys are going in on Sunday, so are you going to carve out time to sort of get the slice of life of the experience as opposed to just the politics?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We'll be there Sunday. I think we are going to, you know, kind of walk around, get the lay of Des Moines, if you will, and have dinner.
That'll take about 20 minutes.
Nice.
I've been to Des Moines.
No,
I have a lot of friends there. Yeah, sure.
I've driven through Des Moines, but I have not been to Des Moines.
It's okay. I mean, I guess it's a medium-sized big city.
I think it'll be very cool. I mean, I'm looking forward to covering it, covering the caucuses, learning a little bit as we all go along, and seeing all the excitement. I think it's cool to be in the thick of everything too.
And so the threat, and they've been talking about. I mean, Skilling kind of said it today, saying that the snowstorm will come Tuesday. So it looks like Monday is safe, at least in terms of voter turnout and the idea of getting a good feel for who's voting for who.
Right. And we're going to be broadcasting the morning show there live Monday and Tuesday. And I think Steve said we are leaving at 10:01 on Tuesday. Hopefully, you know, I think the storm is supposed to come Monday evening after the caucuses.
Yes.
But yeah, we'll keep our fingers crossed.
All right. So I mean, this is exciting for you personally. I mean, you get to cover politics, the national. This is the story. This is 2016. I mean, does it feel good to get outside of the studio and be able to be? I mean, look at you. You're gonna be like a field reporter.
I know. Back getting the boots back on and the the snow boots and the winter hats and the gloves and I work for Channel 9 on the weekends and I do reporting for Channel 9 and I love. That you know, people say, "What's better, being in studio at radio or outside for TV?" And they're both great. You know, they both give you a great feel of the city. You know, and I'm born and raised here, so I love being out and doing interviews. So this is going to be very cool to get kind of back into the reporting mode.
I mean, you're doing this one, then you're doing New Hampshire. I mean, next then would be that gets kind of weird because it's Saturdays and you get South Carolina, and then the I don't know how anyone covers the Super Tuesdays where there's 26 primaries.
Oh, I know.
But I mean, do you see WGN and you continuing to do this kind of coverage all the way through the election?
I think so. I mean, WGN has always been literally Chicago's very own, the voice of Chicago. So I think by us having a presence out there, it'll really bring a truer feel of what's happening there to the people of Chicago and 28 states and part of Canada too.
I remember I've covered. It's interesting because you know. I used to cover conventions for a different radio station. And
yeah, we were talking about
that. Yeah, and it was interesting because they'd have Radio Row. Mm-hmm. So, like, when you go to the actual, like, a DNC or an RNC, they have, like, a row they set up in the stadium that's just, like, every single AM talk show station in America.
On the risers.
On the risers.
The back,
it's just like, boom, boom. And it's all these weird colored, you know, sort of call letters and logos. But now I'm like seeing WGN right between, you know, maybe Tallahassee and then like maybe Atlanta. It's so interesting.
It is interesting. And that's a great point, too, because, you know, when I've covered so many election nights for years and years and years, and that's exactly what it's like. You mm-hmm. know, you're in the media. You're way in the back. You're not hobnobbing with, you know, the candidates.
Yeah, right.
You're way in the back. You're plugged into a malt box and you're doing your reports on the risers. This is kind of a chance to really get in the thick of things and get into the fray.
You should tell people when you're in Iowa and New Hampshire that you're with the WGN TV side, because TV, they always give TV better than radio.
Yeah, they get a better spot TV, on the risers.
Oh, TV's good. Radio, we got a place like 90 minutes out of town that you have to go sit in this place.
The good thing is, though, I can bundle up and put on just a little bit of makeup. I don't have to completely doll up or anything.
That's Andre Darlis from WGN TV. And I'm like, oh, my God, oh, we got some cold cuts lunch meat for
right,
you.
Right, exactly.
Oh, we didn't know TV was here. Oh, yeah, you can talk to Hillary Clinton one-on-one for 90 minutes.
Here's some lobster and sushi.
Yeah, right. Andre Darlis, again, the Steve Cochran Show, heading over to Iowa, along with the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVellantes. Mm-hmm. You guys will be there Monday for the broadcast. And are you broadcasting Tuesday as well?
Yes, we are. We're going to do Steve Cochran Show Monday and Tuesday morning, and you'll hear us live, and then
so
we're going to head back in town. We'll be back in studio Wednesday, and then
maybe if you're not blown away by the storm.
Unless we, you know, are in the Quad Cities stuck at the
I'm letting
Motel
everybody
6.
Know. I let you guys know, let Ro know that I will broadcast 24/7. while you guys are on the road, if you get stuck and you need to change, I can't help you with roadside assistance. I'm not AAA, but if you need me to come in and read some spots, I could do that.
We have faith in you. And I'm going to be with you. I'll be doing some reports for you two from Iowa and New Hampshire.
So Monday night, we will have the results here on the download. We'll do a results show. Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy in studio. And Andrea will be checking in with us for the results from the caucus. It's such a pleasure to have you here at night.
It's a pleasure to be here.
We listen in the morning, and it's so cool to have you here. So thanks for coming in.
Absolutely. Anytime. And you sound great. It's awesome to be here.
We'll see you Monday.
Sounds good. See you, Jeff.
All right, we're at 7:45. We're going to get to the game. We'll get to the pregame with Dave Ennett. But before we do that, let's get to the carryout, which is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper so you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. The Chicago Teachers Union say they have a serious offer on the table from CPS. Karen Lewis says it would take a hit on economics to have better quality in classrooms and job security. This would be huge for the two parties involved and, frankly, for everybody else. I mean, I can't fathom a world where there's not an impending teacher strike. I mean, what are we going to do? I mean, I automatically don't like it. I say vote against it so we continue to have this strange stress in our lives about a teacher strike. Tonight, the GOP debates in Iowa. No Trump. Not yet. But you know he's going to crash it. You know this is all a ruse. He's going to show up at the end busting through the side door on a horse that's painted gold. Then he's going to take a super long tie and he's going to wrap it around Jeb Bush's legs in like a hog tie kind of thing. Right? Because the dude's got super long ties. I find that so abnormal. Like, I just feel like he wants to be president, but he refuses to re-knot. You know, when I do a tie, I'm always like, oh, it's too short, it's too long. I guess I could do it. He's like, I'm not doing it. No way. I did it once. This is my tie. I'm not doing it again. I don't know. I just re-knot. It's too long. New study says that Ukrainian Village is the best neighborhood in Chicago. Heck, the best neighborhood in the country. Oh, what? I knew it. I knew we'd all come around on Phyllis's musical inn. I knew it. When asked for comment, the last remaining Ukrainian said, please don't tell them I'm here. They'll run me down with the double-wide strollers, please. They found me. No more small plates. Kanye West and Wiz Khalifa are fighting on Twitter. I know, it's hard to follow. So let me introduce my new segment. Justin explains to the WGN audience the Twitter beef between Kanye West and Wiz Khalifa. Okay, here's what you need to know. So Ye, that's Kanye West, he tweets, which is on Twitter, the new name for his mixtape, which is an album. And Wiz, it's Wiz Khalifa, he kind of makes fun of it. So it's hard to tell because Wiz, it's Wiz Khalifa's tweets, which is how you talk on Twitter, are somewhat unintelligible. Mostly just emojis, smiley faces, tears, eggplants, a couple of 100s. Then like 100,000 retweets, which is a lazy way to say the same thing. So Wiz Khalifa tweets, which is what you do on Twitter, some weed reference, just marijuana, and the initials KK, which Ye, Kanye West, believes is about his lady, his girlfriend, his wife, Kim Kardashian. Then Ye, Kanye West, goes on a tirade believing he was dissed, which just means disrespected, which includes tweets like, you got trapped by a stripper, which is a slam at Wiz's lady, long-term girlfriend, Amber Rose, who used to be Kanye's lady, long-term ex-girlfriend. Then Amber Rose gets involved by tweeting and saying, Ye, Kanye West, is a whiny baby who likes weird sex, butt stuff. Then Ye, Kanye, realizes that he may have gone too far and he deletes all his tweets, it's Twitter, and apologizes again, lots of emojis. Unintelligible, of course, to Wiz Khalifa. Wait, is Tyga in this feud? It's not? And anyway, that was Justin Explains the Twitter beef between Kanye West and Wiz Khalifa. That took me like 2 days to figure out. In weather, 50 degrees this weekend, followed by a storm. Big storm. Everybody loves a storm. In sports, Jonathan Toews pulled out of the All-Star game because of an illness. So what does the NHL do? They suspend him. They suspend him for one game after the All-Star game. What? If I were Taves, I'd show up and just snot all over the ice, get everybody sick. The fact that a National Hockey League would take a star off the ice during a regular season game because he wouldn't play injured in an All-Star game is crazy. More importantly, what does it say about the state of the NHL All-Star game when you have to threaten people to play? Also, I hope you saw that the Hawks signed an extension here at WGN Radio. 5 more years, so I've got some time to learn how to say Artemi Asinimov. Anisimov? Anisimov. Yeah, we got it. In Bears news, well, even though the Bears aren't in the Super Bowl, all the talk is about the Bears Super Bowl. The ESPN 30 for 30 documentary on the 85 Bears comes out next week. Clips are out. Looks great. Dicka in short shorts, curly hair. I mean, I cried twice just looking at the clips. Hey, Derrick Rose is going to play tonight against the Lakers. Woohoo! Primetime steps up for the big games. In other news, the reserves were announced for the All-Stars, and the Bulls will have Jimmy Butler on the squad. No Pau Gasol, who was like 300 votes short of starting, and no Nikola Mirotic because he had an appendectomy yesterday. I'd suspend him. Coming up tonight, statement game for the Cats. They play Michigan State tonight. Coming up right here on WGN Radio. Win tonight and 16-6 with a win against Michigan State. Looks a lot better than 15-7 with a loss against Michigan State. So no pressure. And finally, a new study says that drinking a half bottle of wine a night can help you lose weight, whereas drinking a full bottle of red wine a night could help you lose your loved ones. That's the carryout for January 28, 2016. Look at that timing, Pete. I got that out right before we got to go to Dave Ennett. That's pretty good. So here's how it's going to go. The Northwestern Wildcats play the Michigan State Spartans tonight. Dave Ennett's got the pregame coming up in just a minute. I'm very excited about this game. This is going to be a great one, Pete. We're going all in on this one.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so it's a big night tonight, but we'll be back after the game, 10 o'clock. We're going to talk with Willie Harris, the Chicago White Sox fame. He's on the 2005 team and the man who scored the last run in the World Series. And also we're going to talk to Rick Kogan about the piece he had last week about digitizing the Studs Terkel archive at WFMT, but also stories got coming out about the original production of Grease. You know, they're going to do the live play of it on Fox this weekend. And so Rick went ahead and chronicled the history of the original production of Grease, which was right here in Chicago. A lot of people forget that because there's been so many different iterations. But Grease came from Chicago and really was the start of the off-loop theater scene as we know it. So that's coming up at 10 o'clock when the download resumes after the game. Did I miss anything?
That's it.
That's it. All right, so let's get ready. I'm ready. I'm ready for big game.
Go
Northwestern
Wildcats.
Michigan State. Let's go Wildcats. We like it. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Welcome to the show. Appreciate you listening in. We're here till 11 o'clock tonight. Patty Vasquez coming up at 11 o'clock. My guest tonight, riding shotgun for the first half, Rick Kogan. The Rick Kogan. It's a short
show.
You
and I are the two guys who are most beleaguered by the sensation that is the Chicago
Blackhawks. It happens to you all the time, right?
All the time, yeah.
Rick Kogan of WGN and Chicago Tribune fame. I'm glad you're here. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure,
Appreciate
Justin.
It.
Always, always.
Let's talk about a couple things. We'll talk about the work that you got coming out this Sunday, but also, you know,
work that I had last Sunday.
Last Sunday about Studs Terkel and the archive over at WFMT.
Well, this is an effort by WFMT in conjunction with the History Museum and a couple other places, the Library of Congress, to finally digitize every single one of the, listen to this, radio host, 5,600 shows that Studs Terkel did.
5,600.
And I'm very flattered to be a guest on your show, but the kind of people Studs had on his show were, Muhammad Ali, Martin Luther King.
Unbelievable.
The young Woody Allen. Every significant figure, I would hazard to say, of the last half of the 20th century did Studs' show.
And they would sit down, and it wasn't sort of like, hey, tell us about your new movie. I mean, Studs Terkel would get deep with these guys. I mean, I've been able to hear a lot of this stuff and be a part of it. These are not just sort of like fluffy, you know, we sat down in a hotel room for 5 minutes with the young Woody Allen. These are hour-long.
Dr. King, what have you been up to? What's your last march?
Yeah. Tell us about your new movie.
Yeah, what's your new march? Where are you going?
No, but these were significant pieces of journalism.
No question, and that's the value of the archive, because I think this is an astonishing historical document. I think right now there are kids in grammar schools across the country who are using these Studs interviews. See, he did some remotes too, going down to Selma for the mm-hmm. marches, going to China, going to Russia, that these kids, new generation, is using as foundation for further exploration of these issues that he talked about. I'll give you and your listeners one great example. There is an interview that Studs did with the 21-year-old Bob Dylan that is one of the most stunning pieces of anything I've ever heard. Dylan's in the studio. Second album's come out. Obviously being introduced to the Chicago audience for the first time. And Studs is like, you know, ladies and gentlemen, he looks like he's a young Huckleberry Finn. If Huckleberry Finn lived in the 20th century.
That's a good impression.
Not bad. There are not many people who still do Studs. And he says, now, Bob, could you play a little something for me? And there's Dylan, reluctant to play, saying, well, you got it on the disc. You could play it on the disc, meaning an LP. You know, it's on the disc. It's a long song, but I wanna hear it. I wanna see you play. And Dylan finally, reluctantly, you hear him taking his guitar out of his guitar case, and then you listen to him play "A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall" live. In the studio. Perhaps impromptu. Among the best versions I've ever heard of that great song. And then they talk about it, and it's about the atomic rain. And then, well, not really. It's more about how newspapers, it's about the stuff that newspapers and radio tell you that is not the truth. And I'm like, holy
cow. That's so awesome.
It is. I mean, it is awesome. Anybody can go to right now to studsterkel.org, and you'll be led to not only this Kickstarter campaign they've started, because they've only digitized.
They've got to digitize it.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of the stuff. I mean, you're talking about either CDs or cassette tapes or reel to reel and that kind of stuff.
It's all real. Most of it was
reel
to
reel. Real.
And they've got to digitize, and the Library of Congress is doing so. There's a Kickstarter campaign. But also, if you go to this studsterkel.org, you will also be led to something called the Pop-Up Archive that has more than 400 of these already available for
listening.
There's
also, you know, in addition to an interview with Bob Dylan, there's an interview with a young Rick Hogan.
Very young.
I want to play some of it. What, this is 1978?
78. I'll set this up by telling you there's also available out there one of the other shows that is a personal. Three of the biggest influences on my life are in the studio at the same time in 1967 when my father, Herman Kogan, the then young new columnist Mike Royko, hijacked Studs' show. They took over his show. Studs is like flabbergasted in order
to
interview.
Yeah.
No kidding. Well, Studs does still do most of the talking. But to interview Studs about the publication that day in 1967 of his first best-selling oral history, Division Street America.
Unbelievable. And
I mean, for me, it's haunting, but it's also fascinating.
Well, let's take a listen to your interview. This is what we have, a young Rick Hogan.
It may start with Studs always played music. He played a ton of music.
In the 43rd Ward, I'm feeling great, and I thank the Lord that I'm back home in the 43rd Ward.
When Strachey singing that song, I suppose, brings reflections to you, doesn't it?
Oh, it certainly does. I think I remember Win Strachey sitting on our back porch summer evenings belting that song out over all of the 43rd Ward, for that matter. And I think also the first saloon I was ever in, tiny boy, was Patty Baller's old saloon at North and Sedgwick. And Patty, of course, was a famous Chicago Ain't Ready for Reform alderman. Yeah.
But that's where you were born, in that area there. How has that ward and the area which you were born changed?
Oh, I think it's changed as dramatically as any area in the city. When I was growing up in what was then the Old Town Triangle, before there was that explosion of psychedelia on Wells Street, there were a couple old antique stores, no night spots, few restaurants. I remember I knew something was changing there when I was 16 years old and went in a store called the Manatees and bought a pair of bell-bottom pants, which my mother and father were sort of appalled at. They said, what kind of child are you becoming? And now, of course, I've seen Wells Street come and go, and now it's a time for renaissance down there, I think.
There you go, young Rick Hogan with Studs Terkel.
Yeah, listen to the way I talked. I mean, it's like, that's really me? That's really, I was still in my 20s. It was in honor of the publication of that fabulous, incredibly hard-to-find book, Dr. Nightlife.
One of the
Chicago.
Best books ever. A friend of mine has that book, by the way. So
it's a classic.
It's a classic.
And the weird thing, go online, try to buy it, ladies and gentlemen, because there's some goof, and I need to call him who's selling it, a copy, for something like $7,000. And I get, that's way more than I ever made writing the book. But it was studs. I mean, it was a treat to be on.
It's, you know, for you, I mean, obviously being close to Studs Terkel, even to his last days.
All the way.
It's hard to fathom whether or not Chicago or the country or the world will ever see another Studs Terkel.
Can't be. He was on the radio, Justin, from 1952 to 1997.
Unbelievable.
Interviewing, again, 5 days a week, every single person coming to town. He did a lot of people over and over again. Royko, he did a number of times. But it's also a combination. It's not just celebrity interviews. It's those ordinary people, the so-called ordinary people that form the basis of his oral histories. It is an astonishing thing. And the kids, these nice three nice young producers at WFMT who are listening to every one of these things, are just overwhelmed. One knew who Studs was. The other two are
really
too young to have ever heard him.
Oh, man. One of my favorite memories working at WBEZ is I got to produce some of Studs Terkel stuff at the end.
Well, one of the great things about BEZ, they have in the studio there, they have that
the bust,
bust of
yeah.
Studs. When I worked there for a short time, I would always, in breaks, I would say, Studs, how am I doing? How am I doing? Like, Rick, you're doing okay.
Rick Kogan, Chicago Tribune and WGN, talking about Studs Terkel. You can find all the information at studsterkel.org. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about what you have in store for this weekend in the paper. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, Rick Kogan. The show is 11 o'clock on Sundays, right? 10 o'clock?
9 to 11 when there are no Hawks games sometimes, and it's 10 to 11. Sometimes it's 9 to nothing.
That's a tough thing.
It works for me. I mean, I certainly understand the public's fascination, justifiable, with the Blackhawks.
No,
why not?
Unbelievable.
And now 5 more years.
5 more years here at WGN. And that's right. That's just today.
That
all
means
right, so
we may still have jobs that's for right. 5 more years.
That's all for the gravy train that is the Blackhawks. All right, so let's talk about Sunday. So you talk about the, you know, Sunday's going to be a big night because it's live, it's Grease. They're bringing Grease to the television. It's a new thing where everybody's got to bring classics to live television.
6 o'clock on Fox. What occurred to me is there's a very big piece in Vanity Fair this mm-hmm. month about the movie. How the movie was made. Big piece in the New York Times last Sunday. Another piece this week in USA Today. The last two, the Vanity Fair piece gives the origins of the play, one paragraph. The other two pieces give it nothing. You wouldn't know who wrote it or where it started.
And it started here in Chicago. It was a big, big part. The whole play started here in Chicago. It got so hot, it went to Broadway. But there's a lot of turmoil around this play and what it was in Chicago.
Well, I'll tell you, I think this, I mean, if you look back and study the history of Chicago theater, the success of Grease was, to my mind, the big bang of what became the legendary off-loop theater scene mm-hmm. here. In the wake of Grease, there comes David Mamet, there comes Body Politic, there comes The Organic. It really started, and it is certifiably the biggest hit ever produced in Chicago.
Absolutely.
By far, it's part of the culture. One of the funny things, it's been a generational thing. It's 1971, it started here, then it went to Broadway. It was, until a chorus line beat it, the longest-running play in the history of Broadway. Amazing. Then the movie comes out. There's another generation that takes the movie. Then the movie's re-released in 98, another generation. And I'll tell you this. My daughter, Fiona, is 11 years old. I don't know if she's seen a commercial. I don't know what it is. She goes, Dad, do you know anything about this movie, Grease? It looks so much fun. I want to watch it. And whether it's good or bad, you know, the songs are good enough yeah. to grab this generation.
Well, the Chicago play, I mean, the play that was in the early 70s, you know, it was a little bit more, it was an off-loop production. It was a little darker. It was a little bit more of a, I don't know.
It was darker.
Where Grease
well,
was,
you kinda... know, what Grease is now is, you know, three quarters music and sort of one quarter story.
Right.
Then it was mostly story with a few songs in there. There were one woman who I interviewed, a woman named Polly Penn, who was a junior in high school when she was cast in the production of Grease there, she hid the script from her parents while they were in rehearsals because crazy. There were too many dirty words yeah. in the script. Then it became a hit, and her lovely mother, Yvonne Penn, said, well, Polly, at least the reviews are good. And they were good, but no one No one involved in the plane, not even Jim Jacobs, who wrote it with Warren Casey. Anybody could have anticipated the success.
There was some, I guess, consternation over the fact of going to Broadway, and they didn't bring everybody with them. There were, their actors, and that happens. But that sort of like that story comes with it, the lore of the idea that it wasn't the Chicago production that ultimately had success on Broadway.
Right. Jim Jacobs and Warren Casey rewrote the show at the behest of two very lucky people who said, hey, we'd like to produce your show and bring it to Broadway.
Yeah.
I think there's a modest amount of disappointment, but these were basically two actors went, Mary Lou Henner and a guy named Jim Canning. Polly Penn, the woman I was just talking about, she might have gone, but she says, as she says in my Sunday story, she goes, well, but I decided to go to college instead.
Right.
I think many of the actors here were disappointed not to be asked.
Right.
That's all.
And that happens a lot. That's not specific to Grease.
This isn't like being in the first Star Wars,
right,
where you have, you want a piece of the action. And they've all stayed relatively friendly. I talked to Gary Houston, who's been a great person on the theater scene here.
Yeah.
The cool story, the gist of Grease is it's a love story, right?
Mm-hmm.
The best part of it, and I'm giving away my Sunday story, but the best part of it is Gary Houston, who played Roger, the mooning king of Rydell High, and Hedda Lubin, who played Frenchie, the beauty school dropout, met during rehearsal doing Grease. They have been together, man and wife, ever since.
Wow.
That's a cool part of the whole thing.
It's
so
great.
What do they have to resent?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to think about those times. I mean, I have family connection because my uncle Guy Burrill was the director.
Sure,
they loved him. So it's amazing to think about that show and its impact, because you're right. I mean, it really was the beginning of what is considered a Chicago theater.
Sure. There was no Steppenwolf. There were none of these things. The other great thing about it, I talked to Jim Jacobs. Warren Casey sadly died of AIDS. Talked to Jim Jacobs, who has made uncounted millions of dollars about this. And I've known Jim over the years, and I said, why are you letting them do this? I mean, the female star is Sandy. Is like, she's famous for being on Dancing with the Stars. And I'm like, come on. He goes, well, Rick, I fought him off for a year, and then a la Don Corleone, they made me an offer I just couldn't
of
refuse.
Of course they did.
I couldn't refuse. He had nothing. And during the whole to do with this, there have been no text messages, no phone calls. It's just, we're doing what we do. And he says, when you sell something, you got to let it go.
Absolutely. And that's a big part of it.
There have been 123,000 theatrical productions of Grease over the years.
Wow.
I know. It was called El Vasilino in Mexico.
Well, when you watch it this weekend on Fox at 6 o'clock, remember that this whole story, everything about that what you're watching, started in Chicago.
That's why I wrote this story, to just remind people, because it's now such a ingrained part of the culture that people forget where it started.
Well,
and some of the people who were in it are just terrific people.
Great idea for a story. Rick Kogan, that's going to be in the Chicago Tribune this Sunday.
You can get it online.
You can always get
When's
it
When's the show on? When are we on now? What day is it?
What day is it?
Is it Thursday?
It's Thursday, yeah.
It's Thursday. Probably online as we are speaking, and certainly online tomorrow.
There you go. Rick, always
Grease
a pleasure,
is the word, my
Grease
friend.
Is Grease is the word, man. Good to see you.
You too.
Grease is the word. Rick Kogan. Always good to have Rick up in studio. More to come. We're going to talk with Willie Harris of the Chicago White Sox. He's a part of the 2005 White Sox championship squad. He's back with the squad as a hitting coach in the minor league, so we'll talk to him. He's back for Sox Fest, which takes place this weekend over at Hilton Towers. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Tomorrow, the White Sox convention rolls into the South Loop at the Hilton Towers. This year, the men in black stocked up on the bats, adding Todd Frazier and Brett Lowry. Not much added to the pitching staff, but the young arms are expected to hold up. Also this year, a familiar face comes back to the organization. Willie Harris has signed on to be a hitting coach in the minor league system at Great Falls. Harris comes back to the Sox. You may remember Willie scoring the winning run of Game 4 of the World Series. After that season, Harris played in Boston and D.C. and Cincinnati, where he ended his career in 2012. Willie Harris will be at Sox Fest along with several of the 2005 champs, and he joins us now on the line. Willie Harris, welcome to the download.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
How exciting is it to be back with the organization?
It's very exciting to be back in the organization, you know, kind of where I grew up. Starting out playing with the Orioles, you know, you're kind of a young kid and you really don't know your way. And I came over here to this organization, man, and they taught me a lot about baseball and about life and how to be a grown-up.
You know, for you, I mean, you're going to be coming back as a hitting coach. I don't know much about sort of what it takes to be a hitting coach. When you prepare yourself for that job, what is it? I mean, is it just fundamentals like we learn in Little League and high school, or do you have to bring your own philosophy to it?
I mean, I've spoke with a few different hitting coaches around the league right now, and they're all different. For me, I think it's all about getting to know your player, getting to know the guys, getting to know what they're capable of doing, knowing their strengths, knowing their weaknesses, and just keeping them positive. Because at some point, you know, if no one really didn't think they were good, they wouldn't be in the situation that they're in already. And sometimes as hitters, we lose confidence and we lose our way. You know, you can go 0 for 15 and you can be hitting the ball extremely hard, and then you can hit a 15 hopper through the infield and it goes down as a base hit. So I think it's all about confidence and having the right mindset and being consistent on a consistent basis.
Well, I mean, you played, you retired in 2012, but I mean, your heyday was, you know, with the Sox in 2005. How much has it changed? It feels like, you know, from everything from sabermetrics to what we saw with Moneyball, all that kind of stuff that, you know, do you have to approach the game of baseball and hitting in general in a different way now?
I mean, with the way the game has changed, you know, the front office, the general manager and stuff, they're going to definitely use a symmetric system. But it's you can't measure a kid's heart. You can't measure a kid's character. And when you're in a ball game, I mean, I can relate back to the 05 championship team. We had guys on that team who were just straight bulldogs, man. And that symmetric system would not have worked with that team.
Right.
And we just found a way to get it done. And like I said, I think it all boils down to your heart and character and just knowing you can do what you're capable of doing and going out and doing it.
Well, for you, I mean, you played several roles on the White Sox. I mean, you were starting at times. You were coming off the bench. As a hitter, especially, you know, for you, I mean, you really filled a pinch hitter role in the playoffs for the Sox. What's the mentality when you got to come in for one at bat, when you come in for a specific position, probably usually late in the game? Does your mentality have to change as a hitter?
Your mentality changes for sure. I mean, because when you come in late in the game, you're either facing the setup man or you're facing the closer. And those guys are the best in the league. So you only get one shot. And I think you just have to hunt that fastball, man. Most closers and most setup men, they love their fastball. They love to light up the radar gun, you know, especially if they're throwing 98, 99 miles an hour, which a lot of these players are doing now. You have to hunt the fastball, whether you're a pinch hitter or a regular everyday player. You want to hit the fastball. I don't know anybody in the major leagues right now who wants to hit a changeup or who goes up there wanting to hit a curveball. So you got to hunt that fastball.
What has your relationship been like with your hitting coaches over the years? I mean, Greg Walker, of course, is a big hitting coach in Chicago White Sox history. But talk about your relationship with your hitting coaches and what they taught you as a baseball player.
Well, speaking of Greg Walker, I still speak to Greg Walker right now today. He's one of the hitting coaches I called and kind of try to pick his brain a little bit on how to approach players, because you can't approach each player the same way. But for me, I mean, I've had Greg Walker as a hitting coach. I've had Rick Eckstein and Lenny Harris. And all of these guys, they all have different approaches, but it all boils down to hunting the fastball, being ready for the fastball. I know Lenny Harris used to use a quote as saying, don't miss the bus, which means, okay, don't be late for his cheese. Rick Eckstein used to use a quote, you know, you can't sneak the cheese by the rat. You know, things like that. So
you got to come up with some quotes, Willie. You got to come up with some quotes.
Man, I ain't quite got there yet, but I'm working on it. I'll come up with something fun.
Let me ask you this: you know, you as a player, I mean, you obviously, you know, wanted to be a baseball player, and you were you succeeded at the professional level. You know, when you were playing ball, did you think about your future? And did you think about, coaching is something I wanted to do?
When I was still being a player, I knew I was a lifer in this game. I knew it. It's just in my system, man. It's in my heart. Even when I was away from the game for the last 3-4 years, I keep up with everybody. I watch games, and you know, I still kind of feel like, you know, I know what's going on in the game. At the same time, I know my time has come and gone. So what I want to do now is I want to help younger kids who you know, get homesick when they're away from home, who when they struggle, they don't know which way to turn. And this game is a game of failure anyways, and you're going to struggle. So I just felt like, you know, it's something that I wanted to do to be able to contribute to help kids, and what better organization to put for than this one.
You've played in a lot of different organizations. You know, you played in Atlanta, you
right.
played in Cincinnati, Boston, the Nationals. Talk about your relationship with the White Sox, and more particularly your relationship with the city of Chicago.
Well, my relationship, I feel like every time I come here, it's like it's home for me. We came up here for a 10-year reunion back in July, I want to say it was.
Yeah.
And seeing those guys, man, Reinsdorf, Kenny Williams, Rick Hahn, all of those guys, and Art Kushner, and everybody who was in the war with us, it's a feeling that you can't explain it, because it's so real. You know, these guys care about you as a person, not only as, you know, baseball season goes. I mean, they care about you as a person. They care about your family. They just care about your well-being. And once you're in this organization, you have to do something really, really bad to work yourself out of it. I tell you that much, because they take care of their guys, man.
Well, what's it mean for you to come back and interact with the fans? Because, you know, Sox Fest is where the fans come out to meet players. And, I mean, you will always be remembered for Sox fans as the guy who scored the winning run that, you know, put
right.
us ahead in the World Series. So, you know, what's it like coming back and interacting with fans?
Well, for me, interacting with the fans, they get a chance to know who I am as a person. You know, when you're a ball player, it's strictly business when you're out on the field. But for a situation like this, what I'm here for now, it's strictly about the fans and giving the fans everything that they want and showing them how much we appreciate them and their support. And just giving them a chance to get to know Willie the person and not Willie the ex-baseball player.
Final question for you, Willie Harris. Like, I mean, is this not unlike your playing career? You're starting in the minors. But is the mm-hmm. ultimate goal for you to be a coach or a manager in the bigs?
My ultimate goal is to be a manager. You know, you got to start at the bottom of the pole, which is, you know, kind of what you're doing when you're a player. And what for me, I love the grind. I love the consistent grind on a day-to-day basis, and the dog days and the heat and trying to beat the other team. For me, that's what I love to do, the competition and just the drive, man. And ultimately, I want to be a coach or a manager in the big leagues. That's everybody's goal, whoever's coaching in the minor leagues. They obviously want to get to the show mm-hmm. someday. That's what I want to do.
Well, we'll be watching closely, hoping for Willie Harris to get the call up.
I appreciate that, man.
He's a hitting coach. Willie Harris is the new hitting coach for Great Falls in the minor league system for the Chicago White Sox. Of course, Willie Harris, part of the 2005 championship team. He's going to be at Sox Fest this weekend. Willie, thanks for taking some time out.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
That's great. Willie Harris. It's interesting. Like, we talked when the Cubs came through that I've never been to a convention.
No.
And you've never been to a convention,
mm-mm.
right?
Nope.
You seem like the kind of guy that would want to go to a Cubs convention.
No. Do I?
Yeah, you seem like the kind of guy that would want to go to a Cubs convention and also buy a jersey that says Zimmerman on the back. It'd be a road jersey, too. Like a gray one, or like the old early 80s blue pinstripe.
No, I'm not.
The Ivan DeJesus style.
Oh, yeah.
Remember those, man? Those
yeah.
are good. So you see, the White Sox are going to go with new uniforms.
I did see this.
For the spring training. They look good.
Yeah. Hitmen. Southside Hitmen.
Yeah, they kind of got the 83 Sox kind of look, but they keep the black and silver kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah, it looks cool.
Yeah. What was that? I just had a thought pop in my head that Straight Outta Compton messed up something with the White Sox.
The years that match up with the logos.
All right. They should have been wearing the red, white, and blue like White Sox, but they were doing the other one. Yeah, I'd be
That's why it wasn't nominated for an Oscar, probably.
Did you see they weren't invited? The cast members were not invited? What I don't understand is, why wouldn't you want the cast of Straight Outta Compton at the Oscars? right? They weren't invited. They get an invite from the Oscars because technically they didn't, those actors were not nominated, and neither was the film because of screenplay. So technically you don't get an invite. So they're not going to be there. I'd love to see Ice Cube's son on the red carpet with...
Yeah, because when you watch that thing too, you'll watch that red carpet and you'll see all the superfluous people that are there, and
oh, Katy Perry's here! Katy, right, come on right. up! What are you doing here? Just enjoying myself.
Or whatever. Is it on ABC? So it's like, here's the cast from the middle. You know, that they have for no reason. You know, they always do that synergy, the network synergy.
Yeah, exactly. They're gonna bring out. They'll be like, our next presenters, Patricia Heaton.
Yeah. And the janitor from Scrubs.
Dun, 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 dun. Movie making is a dream. We all grow up wanting to do costumes and makeup. Here are the nominees for Best Makeup.
I saw that somebody, I can't remember who it was, maybe Sam Jackson or Morgan Freeman. That sounds racist, but
yeah, it was very racist of you.
When I went publicly, it said that we should get rid of award shows altogether. Man after your own
right,
heart.
Right, they must be download listeners.
Yeah, probably.
I'm a big proponent of that. I think it would be much better. I mean, obviously, there's so much money involved, and you know the ratings, and then they'll never do it. But the idea that we could just get like a Monday morning, oh hey, news story's out. Look, DiCaprio won for Revenant.
Yeah.
You know, like it was almost. I mean, there's so much money, but it just feels like if there wasn't, you just bypass the whole thing. I don't know. I just feel like, but that's just that sort of infomercial concept for all of the arts just seems to me to be, ugh. The Tonys, ugh. Oh, God, I can't stand the Tonys. And you know, it's because of download favorites like Brian D'Arcy James who does a lot of work for this show. You know, we want to watch. I want to watch every time. He's nominated. Every time.
Yep.
I'm like, you know what? My Tonys boycott's over. I'm going to watch him. And then he doesn't win. And I watch like 4 hours of it. It's the same with the Grammy. The Grammys is the only one where I'm like, well, they're going to do live music throughout it.
There's usually always some sort of interesting performance that happens.
But the tuxedoed, stars, actors, and all that kind of stuff, I could do without. I don't care. And the fact that during the Golden Globes, we talked about this, they weren't even good. Like, the point being that if you're going to put on a show like this, if we're going to have to watch it, be great with your speeches.
Yeah.
Evoke tears. Do something. Make a message. Do something where you're like, oh, great. This is like, I lost my speech. I want to thank my publicist, my assistant publicist. I don't care.
No, I hate when they bring out, like, oh, this is such a surprise, but here, let me take out my notepad.
I really had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no idea I was going to win this. Yeah. Well, you know what? There was only five of you. If you're that vain that you're like, I just don't have time, no time. No time to even think about it. I'm not going to win anyway. So I'm just not going to think about it. I'm going to watch SportsCenter instead. That's what they're telling you. They watched SportsCenter last night instead of thinking about who they were going to thank.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for entertaining us. That's what happens when, I guess, you don't pay the actors, right? That's what's happening there. So
I guess it'll be interesting to me, to Chris Rock hosting, and apparently he's not going to shy away from the controversy.
Yeah, he won't. He'll be good. But, all right. Fun.
Well, you said, I think I recall you saying that you want to go to a party.
Yeah, no, I did. Yeah, no, I'm not going to a party. I'm the worst guy at the Oscar party. And what I was saying is we should take back the Oscar party. The snarky among us. We should have a download Oscar party. And all it is finger pointing at the screen and making snarky jokes. Like, because every time I end up at an Oscar party, I think that's what we're doing. And then someone gets really mad at me because I don't like, or I'm not respecting foreign film.
Yeah.
Or best adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh my God, I don't want no shushes. You get a shush, you get kicked out of my party. I want it loud. I don't want anything. No shushes. I will. It's just got to be chaos. I want it to be more like, nobody shushes anybody at a Super Bowl party. You know, if the game is on, you don't shush them.
No.
Because no one cares what they have to say. So I want a party where it's an Oscar party where it's just straight up snark. As a matter of fact, let's rent out a club and then have a DJ and be real loud so it's just on the TVs. and there's no sound. And you'd be like, oh, I think they're about to do blah, blah, blah. You know, just skip it all.
All right.
So let's make that happen. Who do we talk to?
I don't know. I don't know any clubs.
Yeah, me neither. Well, we'll figure it out. We'll get our best rayon shirt on. And we'll go during the day and knock on some doors right here on Clubbard Street and be like, yeah, I want to talk to you, man, about a great new party on Oscar night. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be off the hook. We're wild and crazy guys. You and me. All right, we got a full show tomorrow night.
Yeah.
I'm excited for this. The show, we're going to have Justin Peters, who wrote the book Idealist, the book about Aaron Schwartz, the wildly talented and genius mind behind the free internet movement, who unfortunately killed himself about 3 years ago. We talked to him about that movement, and it's a fascinating story about Aaron Schwartz and what happened to him and how the Justice Department really went after him as almost like a statement, because they couldn't get their hands on the WikiLeaks guys or Edward Snowden.
Mm-hmm.
But they had their hands, their hooks into Aaron Schwartz, and they really, really were going to throw the book at him. So we'll talk to Justin Peters about that story. Also, we've got a lot of stuff tomorrow. I feel like, you know, there's...
Need 6 hours.
I know, right? We need 6 hours. You know what's tomorrow? The return of the frying pan,
oh,
Steve
yeah.
Gadlin. Best radio, local radio, in my favorite hour in all of Chicago radio. Steve, of course, who won on I Want to Draw a Cat for You on Shark Tank. He comes to you with his new business idea, his new invention, the Download Nation, yay or nay. It's a pretty simple concept. He hasn't been on since, I think, Christmas.
Ah.
Like, was he here in January? He might have been here for one in January. We did one in January. But
this is January. I don't think he's been.
Because of Hawks games.
Something.
Hawks games have been on every Friday night, and we usually come on at the end, so he hasn't had a chance. But I think that starting, I was looking at the calendar, like starting tomorrow through February, we've got shows on Fridays.
Excellent.
So Steve will be back. So tomorrow night, sounds good. Well, that's going to do it tonight for the download. Strangely, we had a little bit of 7 o'clock, a little bit of 10 o'clock. We'll be back tomorrow for a full show here on WGN. Patty Vasquez up next with Pretty Late. Patty Vasquez. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.